Podcast. I'm your host, Dalton Miller, joined as always by my co-host, Corey Kinnon. It is an early morning recording for me, so I have my coffee. It is a late night recording for Corey, so he is about to go to sleep after this. But we are here to talk about the NFL draft, obviously, but we want to get a little bit macro here, and we want to talk a little bit about prospect fatigue. What goes into it? Who in this class is deserving of a little bit of prospect fatigue? Who is getting bumped down unnecessarily? And there's an opposite edge of this. It's two-edged, because you also have the guys who come on late and out of nowhere. And how do you kind of weigh these two different things?
Yeah.
Corey, as I said, you're here. I can't do it alone. How are you doing today?
I'm good, man. It was a swell Monday. We are getting close to warmer weather here in the Midwest, so I don't get nice weather all year round, dude. Like some of us.
Dude. So it's been raining since I got back weeks ago, pretty much. The spring hit on Sunday, and it was like, okay, it's springtime now. It's springtime now. We had sun on Sunday and sun on Monday. I got out walking. It was beautiful.
Sounds great.
So I'm excited for you to get the good weather, because listen, guys, seasonal depression and not being able to like get out into the sun and walk, like people underestimate how good the sun and a freaking walk around the block is for you. Mm-hmm. It is so good for you mentally and physically. Mm-hmm. And we have statistical analysis to prove this. So get outside and walk your asses somewhere. Anyways, it doesn't matter where it is. Prospect fatigue.
Yes.
Who are we talking about today, Corey?
Yeah, so we highlighted three to four big ones, but two of them, their estimated draft positioning hasn't really changed. One, because they play a really important position that tends to get elevated anyway, no matter what direction the discourse goes in. And two, on the opposite end of the spectrum, they play a position that tends to get lowered in the draft anyway, but the talk has gotten a little soft on both of these guys. So the big four that I really had in mind, and we'll kind of peripherally talk about some other aspects on a macro level again around these guys, but quarterback Shedeur Sanders, wide receiver Luther Burden, cornerback Will Johnson, safety Malachi Starks. Those are kind of the big four. And Malachi Starks is a case where like he didn't test as freak athletically as we maybe thought he would have. But also a lot of safeties don't, because a lot of safeties win with instincts. It's a very intuitive position. Kyle Hamilton is one of those guys, and Starks and Hamilton aren't the same types of players, but Hamilton ran a 4.6. Like there are elements to this that it doesn't really matter. And I think Starks, and again, when you go back and look at next gen stats in the NFL combine IQ thing they launched, and you can see that Starks was one of the fastest players on the field drills at the combine as well at the same event. So, but the discourse has gotten a little weird too, where like his tape probably did fall off a little bit compared to his freshman sophomore tapes, where he was absolutely dominant when he first stepped onto the field, but it's still really good. And I think, and I don't, I mean, I'm just interested in your take on this. I don't put a lot into breakout age, but there is an aspect to it where I think I do give players a little bit more grace, like a Malachi Starks, like a Luther Burden. When Luther Burden can go for 1,600 yards as a sophomore, if he only goes for 600 yards as a junior, then I'm like, okay, well, something else is up here, because it's clearly like not him 100%. Or the same with Starks. Like, where are you at with that kind of stuff?
I think if you can come into college football as an 18-year-old and dominate, you're probably pretty special. Now, there are flash in the pans, especially I think it's more prevalent at quarterback than anything else. I think coming on early as a defensive player, especially at a reactive position like cornerback or like the safety, is probably the worst thing that can happen to you. Mm-hmm. And I say that because it is such a volatile position. Mm-hmm. And we saw it with Kyle Hamilton. Kyle Hamilton's entire draft stock and narrative fell apart against an Oregon State team when he was stuck in the slot for the entire matchup against a 5'8" dude who could move like crazy. Mm-hmm. That's where his draft stock went from top five best player in the draft to, oh, is this guy athletic enough to play in the NFL? That one game. And it's because you are so good so early that the eyeballs are on you more. And I think we've talked about this before, where you watch these guys over summer and you get three games and they're the best players in their class. And so you are watching them every single week. And so you get more exposure overall to these guys than anybody else in the class. When you have a guy who's good forever, you are watching more football of them.
Yeah.
And at some point, they're going to have a bad game. They're going to have some bad reps. And that is what really hurts us, because we get these huge sample sizes that we're not getting from other guys. So say, for instance, we're going to talk about the other edge of this, Matthew Golden coming on just this year for Texas. You are going to ask, and for other guys who have these flash in the pan big years in their draftable year, which games are you going to watch? You might watch the game where he goes 2 for 18, but you're probably looking at your all 22 plug and saying, I need this game, this game, and the game, because I see it. Mm-hmm. I need this game, this game, and this game. And I'm like, oh, this guy had 3 sacks in this game. He had 2 sacks in the other game. And then he had 6 pressures in the other one. You're watching their best tape. Mm-hmm. But you've seen Will Johnson play for 3 years.
Right.
You've seen the bad reps. And at a position like corner, at a position like safety, you're just going to get beat sometimes. Because the guy that you're going up against is also a freak athlete. And you are in a reactive position athletically. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. You're not going to be infallible.
Yeah, it's not a direct excellent comparison, because he still ended up going 3rd overall and is an all-pro, just is now the highest paid corner in the NFL. But there was a lot of talk around Derek Stingley at the time, too. I don't know if you remember this talk around Derek Stingley.
Oh, yes, I do.
People are like, this guy's not as good as everybody thought he was. Sauce Gardner's better.
Yep.
Like, people thought that Houston made an awful, awful decision in 2022 to draft him 3rd overall.
Well, and it didn't help when Sauce came in as a rookie, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, the NFL's gotten a little less lax on long corners using their hands right off the line of scrimmage than they were a couple of years ago, I would say. And I think that plays into it quite a bit. But there was a lot of talk about Derek Stingley. And again, he ended up going 3rd overall. Kyle Hamilton went 12th overall, I think. Again, plays safety, so kind of a similar situation. I think their situations draft stock-wise are pretty similar, obviously not similar players. But if I could toot my own horn a little bit, Kyle Hamilton was my number one overall player in that class.
Yeah, it's less about where they go and more about the narrative surrounding them.
Oh,
when
we
talk about prospect fatigue. Mm-hmm. Because the NFL doesn't. The NFL watches so much of all of these guys over the time, because these area scouts have seen these guys for years. And unless it is a true late breakout like Xavier Leggett, they know who these guys are. They are familiar with their game.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So I think the big one is probably Will Johnson. I think you would maybe agree with that. And again, Will Johnson, we're on a microscopic level, because like we're talking about him going from both of our number one player over the summer, Dane Brugler's number one player of the summer, to now his estimated draft position is about 12th overall. And it's because he played hurt and then he didn't play for a large stretch of games. But we have to sit here and be like, what? I'm sitting here like, for one, I didn't think his 2024 tape was that bad when he did play, when he's trying to play through it a little bit.
Oh.
But like, you have freshman year tape, you have sophomore year tape of absolute dominant stuff in press man and off man. And now we're trying to build this guy as a cover three corner, like a strict cover three corner who can't turn and run. Like, that's where I'm like, what are we talking about? what are we talking about? We have the tape where it's like, no, he's in guys' faces. He's carrying with long speed. Like, it's all there. Like, this year, for coming off a national title, Michigan's awful to start the season. Like,
Michigan's all you're banged up.
Yeah.
Will Johnson one is a bit annoying.
It is.
He's not the only one. Mm-mm. And I think the big ones, the really big ones, mm-hmm. because I think I just heard this. Daniel Jeremiah talking about potentially Tet McMillan, and we're going to talk about the real big one in Luther Burton here in a second, mm-hmm. but he was talking about Tet McMillan potentially going as high as the Dallas Cowboys at 12. As high. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have a wide receiver before 12, or is Matthew Golden going to go and be the number one wide receiver over a guy like Tet?
Yeah. I think the NFL has come around on Travis Hunter as a player that when they draft him, they're drafting him because they want to get the ball in his hands as many times as possible per game. And so I mean, the Browns GM straight up said it at the combine, and I'm sure there's a lot of buildings that view him as a wide receiver who then go and say, well, when we're in dime, you can come on the field. Like when we need you, we can come on the field defensively as well, because he's not playing full time both sides of the ball. So probably some high leverage nickel situations and then dime packages. You'll probably get Travis Hunter on the defensive side of ball. But I do think the NFL has kind of come around a little bit full circle and viewing him as a wide receiver predominantly. But yeah, the technical stuff is
die. That makes me want to die. And it makes me want to die because I think it takes away from what and it's better for him monetarily. Yeah. He's going to make more money doing that. He's going to produce more marketability and fame playing wide receiver than he would, as long as he produces at wide receiver, than he would at corner. But his mind, his mm-hmm. ability to prepare week to week and understand, I think because he plays wide receiver and has gotten so good technically mm-hmm. At wide receiver, his mind as a corner is so much fun mm-hmm. to watch the wheels not even have to turn.
And instinctive, him just dude.
Intuitively, instinctively know exactly what he is supposed to be doing, where he's supposed to go, and watching the fluidity and explosiveness in that trigger to the ball, on top of the ball. Like, we're talking about truly difference-making stuff. And I think playing wide receiver at the NFL level and saying, hey, come on in dime, come on in high leverage nickel situations, I don't know. And maybe he's just going to be a psychopath and have the mental.
He could be the Shohei Ohtani, just like, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he'll have the mental bandwidth to be able to prepare on both sides, because I think there is less preparation overall that goes into wide receiver from just like a mental bandwidth perspective when it comes to, like, obviously you have to have your timing down, you have to have footwork down, you have to understand what your checks are going to be and things of that nature and get that rapport with the quarterback. But I think the preparation at corner is going to take up more mental bandwidth. So I'm going to be interested to see if we're seeing more mental mistakes, or if you're seeing him be put in situations where it's more just like, you're an unbelievable athlete as well, just go follow that guy.
Yeah.
Like we're going to play man and you're just going to follow him.
Yeah. But that was a pretty big Travis Hunter tangent off of a Tet McMillan conversation that we were having there where, I mean, coming into the season, people had top five grades on Tet McMillan as well. Again, 6'4", again, we've always been a little bit weirded out by his profile. No, I guess he came into the summer as like the 17th, and he's risen actually to up about the 13th. But yeah, we're talking about no pure non-Travis Hunter wide receivers going in the top 10 at this point, mm-hmm. Which is a little strange as well. You mentioned the wide receiver to talk about here, though, is Luther Burden, who came into the season as like the 7th overall prospect.
Yeah,
and we're using Grinding the Mocks, who tracks literal mock drafts all year round. We've got 1,900 mock drafts of Luther Burden that we're tracking here. He came into the season over the summer, a top 10 player, about 7th, 8th-ish overall on according to grinding the mocks. He's now the estimated 28th player off the board.
He had 1,200 yards last year. And it pretty much got cut in half this year. Mm-hmm. He had 1,200 yards last year in an offense that, I mean, wasn't awesome. I mean, that was a good football team, but what he was asked to do and what he was able to show that he could do last year was outrageous. Mm-hmm. And then this year it just completely fell off a cliff. That offense fell off of a cliff. Because everybody was talking up Theo Weiss for a while, too.
Yeah.
Early, because he was out producing Luther Burden, but even Theo Weiss fell off a cliff, too, and kind of stopped producing the way that he was. But Luther Burden went from 1,200 yards to 676 yards. His yards per reception went down. His touchdowns went down. But you still saw the special skill set from the slot.
Yes.
You still saw him winning in contested situations through contact up in the air to go get the football on slot fades. You saw the athleticism. You saw his ability when he got the ball in his hands behind the line of scrimmage. Yes, we have never seen him run the full route tree. But watch the guy move.
Yes.
He's got it.
Mm-hmm.
He's got it.
And how he wins.
He might not be a technical route runner right now, but he has the movement skills to do it. Mm-hmm. And he has the ability. You've talked about this for a while now. He has the capability. And when you pair that with a 5'11", 210-pound frame that is rocked up and he plays physically, you're not just talking about a guy who is fluid and explosive and has the ability to get in and out of his race, because we're not talking about a Deebo Samuel here. And Deebo Samuel is somebody who I thought was a pretty decent route runner overall and more physical, because he was like 215, 220, yeah, like literally built like a running back. But he wasn't as fluid.
Built like Jalen Milroe. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't as fluid as Luther Burden is.
No.
And so for me, the comp for Luther, and this is going to sound insane because he's not the same caliber of player, mm-hmm, but he reminds me more of a Ja'Marr Chase than he does a Deebo Samuel. And yeah, I think you win similarly at the NFL level as Luther Burden, as Ja'Marr Chase does. You're going to see him run a slant and take it for 75 yards. Mm-hmm. He might not run a 4.33. He runs a 4.42 and he's still fast.
Yeah, he is very Ja'Marr Chase light-ish. I've always kind of looked at it. Yeah, him. I've kind of reverted to like the Golden Tate-ish kind of comp.
Yeah, that's not a bad one.
Dude's 5'11", but he's cooking dudes at Z. He's cooking outside the numbers. He's picking up chunks of yards after the catch. He can turn a slant into a big play. I do think Burden's a little stronger through contact than Golden Tate was, but I think that might be also me underselling how tough Golden Tate was through contact as well. Like, Golden Tate was unbelievable through contact as well. And he had a really productive career playing. Early on in Seattle, he was a slot only, but then developed into a Z. And by the time like he got to the middle of his career and then into New York near the end of his career, he's playing almost exclusively outside the numbers. Mm-hmm. And so I've always kind of gone with that. But let's just say, like, with any of these guys we're talking about, well, besides the quarterback, because we've talked about the quarterback classes and how we don't have a top 25 grade on either of the quarterbacks. But like, Luther Burden's still a top 10 player for me. Malachi Starks is still a top 10 player for me. Will Johnson is still a top 10 player for me.
Yeah.
Like, for me, the tape is the skill set is the skill set. The skill set is the skill set, and they've all got it, in my opinion. My eyes are peeled out of the box score. Like,
and yeah, and I do want to, because it's funny, I was a lot more tentative on Luther Burden than you were, mm-hmm, and as consensus was going into the year, And then I watched his 2024 tape and I liked it more. I liked him more as a player in 2024 than I did in 2023. I thought he got better. But you have to be able to separate the player from the situation that they find themselves in. He can't throw himself the freaking football.
No, and when your quarterback play is that volatile, what's the way that you can ensure that you can do touch? And they still couldn't get him touches, is you put him closer to the quarterback. You put him closer to the quarterback. So, like, that was the goal there. Still didn't work out very well for him. But, no. Yeah.
No, and, yeah. And I understand the skepticism in his profile because of the lack of nuance that he has as a route runner.
Mm-hmm. He is a slot only guy offense, at the college level. Yeah.
Slot only guy at the college level. Not producing in his draftable year. Like I understand all of this. I really truly do. But at the end of the day, especially in a wide receiver class like this one, I am betting on Luther Burden. I am betting on that player. And he doesn't have a first round grade for me, but none of these wide receivers not named Travis Hunter do. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way that this year has gone. It's an underwhelming class overall, but yes, he's my 10th ranked player. And I believe that give him 2 or 3 years of development. And don't put and listen, maybe going 26th to a good football team that already has a number one and he can work himself into it. Maybe that's what's best for him. But low expectations, let him work his way into it. And then in 2 or 3 years, we'll be looking at 1,200 to 1,400 yards. And I think the big thing that we'll see from him is the ability to get the ball around the red zone, use his frame, attack the football, and he'll be a 12 plus touchdown guy. Yeah. More than anything else.
Yeah. Track the football, man, and you can win at the NFL level.
Smaller Dez.
The dude tracks the football so freaking well.
A smaller Dez when it comes to going in and bullying guys at the catch point and making these plays that, especially on like back shoulder throws from the slot.
Yeah.
When he's, I wouldn't say blanketed, but I mean, even when the defense is rotating towards him and Brady Cook's like, F it, we're going to throw it to the sideline anyways. And we did start to see it a little bit towards the end of their season where they started trying to just say F it and throw him the ball. And that's when we started to see the old flashes of Luther Burden a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But again, do we want to touch on some of these guys? Again, the NFL draft, especially from a media perspective, does tend to be a what have you done for me lately guy, like kind of kind of industry. And we've seen that not only in production and draftable years, but then combine testing as well. We've seen some really bad football players get drafted really high because of their combine testing numbers. And the name that comes to my mind is Tyquan Thornton when he was drafted in the second round by the Patriots. Bill Belichick had a string there for a while of drafting some pretty bad football players, but because he ran because he ran a sub 4.3 at the combine, people were like, oh, but his tape, he came into the combine as like an easy day three player, runs a 4.29, and people are like, wait a second. And he goes second round. And now he's on a practice squad somewhere. Where is Tyquan Thornton at right now? He got cut this past year. Oh, he's on the Chiefs practice squad. And then he signed with the Chiefs practice squad. And Matthew Golden's obviously a lot better player than Tyquan Thornton, but I think Matthew Golden's getting that combine treatment because he ran a 4.29 in a wide receiver class where we don't really have a big name. Like Tet's the big, Travis Hunter's the big name, but like we've been kind of mum on Tet again from the beginning, as in like he's a top 15 player in this class, but not a first round grade player. And now that's why this Matthew Golden stuff is happening. He came on late after the Bond injury. And then blew up in the playoffs, the SEC championship game in the playoffs, ran a 4.29, and now we're like, well, Matthew Golden's wide receiver one. As much as I love Matthew Golden, Matthew Golden did not run a 4.29 on tape. And I love every way that Matthew Golden wins, except for his maybe ability to separate vertically. And so, like, that 49 doesn't really change a whole lot for me in terms of his draft profile. I think he solidified himself as a first round pick, but like, for me, he's still just like a top 30 player in this class.
And if we want to talk about prospect fatigue, let's talk about somebody who has been good for at least 3 years now, and Emeka Egbuka, who isn't even going in some first round mocks as who I believe should be the number three wide receiver off of the board, if not number four behind Golden. But like, that's a dude who it came back on this year. Thank gosh. Mm-hmm. That he started to get the ball, especially in the playoffs, some of the plays that he was making for that football team. But awesome as a sophomore, went into the summer, and I was like, he could battle for wide receiver one with Marvin Harrison Jr., who was obviously a freak. And then he got hurt, and Marvin Harrison Jr. looked like one of the best wide receiver prospects we've seen in a very long time. So that changed a little bit. But I do think, you just kind of, especially a player as nuanced as Emeka Egbuka, mm-hmm. it's just like, after a while, it's like, well, what can you really say about him at this point? He's different because I don't think that his stock has ever like really dropped all that much. I think he was like a mid to late first rounder, mm-hmm. and he's still a mid to late first rounder, but you just kind of get bored of talking about him because it's been 3 years.
Yeah, and he's not overly flashy. Yeah.
And he's not overly
flashy. The dopamine hits aren't the same way that, like, I'm thinking of, like, Malik Nabers last year with LSU. Like, some of the biggest highlights. And I think, especially from a layman perspective, if you don't see the dopamine hits on Twitter on a player, like, you just assume, like, that's not one of the top guys in the class.
Yeah.
So, Emeka Egbuka came into the season about 18th, and for some reason, his arrow is going the downward trajectory. He's sitting about 27th right now in the estimated draft position, which is odd. It's
weird because, in this class.
Yeah, it's very weird. He just had a really good playoff, and he's a decent enough athlete. Like, it's a very weird.
I feel like the NFL will like him because he's a guy who can do the dirty stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, for sure. And then we're looking at Maxwell Hairston, who was not mocked into the first round. And then after the combine, like mid to late February, jumped from about 50 to 30.
Which is interesting because
just in the last month,
we don't like very much this wide receiver class or this cornerback class. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference between the two when it comes to testing at the combine. He was the fastest guy on the field and plays a reactionary position. And I mean, we've talked about him all year. He only played five games. But we were talking about him before that. We were talking about him a little bit over the summer as well, but it's the difference between the two that is very, very interesting to me, that he came on so strong so late. And I'm sitting here like, ooh, I didn't love what I saw from him at the Senior Bowl. And does he have the physicality to play at the next level? Because it's like you said earlier, we were talking about Sauce Gardner and the ability to kind of get away with physicality a little bit more. And listen, I love watching Hairston stalk wide receivers because he is just that athletic, that he has the overt confidence to stick with guys. But mm-hmm. when he's put in a position where he has to bang with guys who are leaning against him at the top of a route, he's probably going to lose. And that's scary for me.
Yeah.
That's scary because offensive pass interference is rampant at the NFL level, as it should be, because it's not ever called.
So last one to probably hit on here, and this is, again, the opposite of prospect fatigue. This is the what have you done for me lately, which is odd because this player was very good all season long. One of your favorite players in the class. I also quite enjoy him as well. Armon Membau was being mocked in the fourth round, even through December into January, and now is seen as the estimated eighth player off the board, 8 to 10 in that range. So that's really fun. Despite being very good all season long.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because, like I've said all year, since I first saw him against Texas A&M, he was Feldman's freak. Mm-hmm. He was the Feldman freak from that team, a team with Luther Burden. And we've talked about this ad nauseum at this point. Like, of course, this is the top 20 player in the class. Of course. Why? And it's so funny because I'm not the first guy to be on him. There were other draft Knicks that were like, yeah, this dude can freaking play. Like, this dude can freaking play. And when I first watched him, I was like, oh, like, he looks good. Like, this could be a day two guy. And they were like, no, like, I've watched three games of his so far. They're like, this dude's a top 15 player. And I was like, oh, okay. And then you watch him against Texas A&M. You watch him against South Carolina. And it's like, this dude's out playing Will Campbell. Mm-hmm. This dude has better measurables than Will Campbell. What is making Will Campbell a better prospect? What part of his profile?
Membell's been doing it since freshman year, too. He's a three-year starter, too, as well. Which is what a lot of people would say is like Will Campbell's been doing it since his very first day on campus.
Yeah. Will Campbell's been awesome.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, this isn't an anti-Will Campbell thing. Yeah.
It's the difference between playing for LSU and Missouri.
Missouri. I think there's something, this goes back to Burden too, and maybe this is where we wrap it up, but I think there's something to be said about those Missouri guys who opted to stay at Missouri too.
Mm-hmm.
Like Burden could have gone anywhere in the country last year. Membell probably the same way. But Burden was seen as, we came into the summer saying who's wide receiver one between Luther Burden and Tet McMillan. Like that was a very hot conversation. Mm-hmm. A very probably overplayed conversation, honestly, because everybody was talking about it. He could have gone anywhere in the country and opted to stay at Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Membell probably not to that extent, but pretty similar situation as well. Like, and they opted to stay there, fought through a pretty tough season as well. But
we haven't even brought up possibly the big one, which is Shedeur Sanders.
That's true. So Shedeur is weird because he plays quarterback and he's still estimated to go top five.
Well, that's the thing is, like, I think it's funny. I think the prospect fatigue with him has hit us more than it's hit the rest of the league in the media. Because, like, we've had multiple mock drafts where he didn't even go in round one.
Mm-hmm.
But then I look at all these mock drafts. And it's like, oh, he's going number three. He's going to the Giants. And so it's funny because the narrative is that he's not very good. Like, that's everything that we're hearing. And we heard all throughout December, January, February, like, the NFL might not be super high on him. The NFL might not love him. And then the combine, and he's like, just like, I'm going to say what I want to say, and I'm going to be the person that I am going to be. I'm going to be Deion's son. And we kept hearing whispers, and now he's still going top five in mock drafts. So I think the prospect fatigue might have hit us more than it hit everybody else, and I'm glad for that, because I think when you look at him, especially in this class, obviously, but in a class or a draft where there are obvious quarterback needs at the top, he should go top 10. He should.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's so many teams that need a quarterback, and they're all going to punt, all mm-hmm. of them. I could see one or two, but we're talking Browns, Giants, Saints, Jets. I mean, they've got Justin Fields, but like on a pseudo 1-year deal.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You might get fired if you draft the guy and he's bad, but you're definitely getting fired if you pass on the guy and he's good somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have more grace if you draft a bad player than if you don't draft the really good one.
Again, I think the quarterback position is such a, like, unbelievably, this is like the Iguka conversation you just had. If you're a boring but good quarterback, people tend to overthink you and overlook you. I know CJ Stroud went second overall in 2023, but again, the optics around CJ Stroud, he should have gone first, was that like, oh no, the Texans should take Will Levis because he's got the bigger arm and he's got the higher ceiling and the more, like, but like CJ Stroud played the quarterback position the right way from the pocket, had a good feel for pressure, knew when to step up, threw the ball with unbelievable accuracy. Like, did all the little things super well, and people were like, he doesn't run enough. He lost. He never played it. He never won a Big Ten title. He lost to Michigan every time they played. Like, all of these other circumstances, it's like, but like, that's not tape. It's not tape. And like, look what he does as the quarterback. Yeah. And you can see that he's a very high level quarterback.
It's like he's not creating outside of structure. He doesn't need to create outside of structure. He plays at Ohio State. The offensive line's great. He's playing with like 75 first round wide receivers. And part of that went into his narrative as well. But like, he just won as a quarterback was supposed to win.
Yes.
But then you have guys like Zach Wilson who are like, everybody wants to.
Everything's off platform and out of structure and super fun arm angles and
social media quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
The real social media quarterbacks, not Justin freaking Herbert. Acho. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. We gotta stop because Cam Ward did it today. This is why it's fresh in my mind. We gotta stop the rolling away from pressure and throwing back across the body deep throw that pro days. The Zach Wilson throw, like the rolling
roll left and throw right.
Throw right. Yeah, I hate that throw so much. Because what does that translate to? When are you ever doing that in a game? Ever. So and that's a little bit of how I feel about Shador. Is like, we don't love Shador. Well, one, because there's some optics around his name and his last name specifically. But two, he has done a better job this season of trying to play within structure when he can. And he's the hardest case I've ever experienced of trying to separate a quarterback from his offensive line. And like, what's a bad habit? What's literally trying to survive back there? Mm-hmm. And what is like, I think he's brilliant, but like, that offense is almost always in trips. The splits from those receivers are always insane, and there is never any pre-snap motion. Mm-hmm. So it's so hard to figure out like what is design flaw as well. And I think a lot of it's design. They don't have a run game at all. Like, they can't run the football. Bad offensive line. So like, you insulate that guy in an NFL system with an NFL coach, and you're going to tell me that like he's going to struggle to pick up a playbook just because like, that's the stuff I struggle with. But like, he had complete control of that Colorado offense, complete control of it, and he's doing it from structure, and he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks I've ever seen. So like, I don't know. And again, I've died on this hill already that Shador is QB1 in this draft class. Like, I've beat it like a dead horse. So like, there's not much I need to do. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'll live with it. But like, I don't get it.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, a lot of it will come down to the situation that these guys find themselves in. And if one of them is going to Tennessee and one of them is going to New York, even though New York has been a dumpster fire organization now for the past, you know, since Eli retired, I'm still going to bet on the guy that goes to New York over Tennessee, because I think Tennessee has ran potentially even worse.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this in the pod, too. They have no congruency from front office coaching staff, and they haven't for a half decade or longer. Yeah.
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 Yep. That's guys, we talked about prospect fatigue for a lot longer than I thought we were going to.
This ended up
being almost a 40-minute episode. Incredible work from us. We really yapped this time around on a Tuesday episode. So for the rest of the week, we will definitely do a Q&A this week. I want to get to y'all's questions. We will figure out what we're going to do the rest of the time. I think we talked about prospect fatigue. Maybe we're going to talk about some underrated prospects that aren't getting the buzz that we think deserve a little bit of buzz. Maybe talk about some small school guys at some point this week. Do you have any other ideas that you might want to float to the people to do a little tease?
Oh boy, dude, we're a month out. My brain is fried. I'm going to have to sit down and like have to knock out some talking points for sure, because we're on the home stretch here, and it feels like we've talked ad nauseum. Maybe we revisit some of the superlatives that we did preseason, like, and then and revisit and redo them now. Ooh, because like, I'm thinking like with running back, my explosiveness superlative was Devin Neal, but he's definitely lost juice between last year and this year. And like, I wouldn't pick Devin Neal for explosiveness.
Corey. Yes, we are definitely going to do that. I'm going to revisit that episode. I'm going to get everything annotated down, and then we are going to revisit that, because yes, absolutely. Yeah. Let's get it. I'm going to move to 2026 here soon.
I think I am too. Yeah, I've got to knock out quarterbacks for reception perception. So I think that's going to take up the bulk of my efforts and my energies the rest of the way out for this month. So for sure. But yeah, 40 minutes, man.
That's all we got. All right. As always, guys, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. Make sure that you guys are giving us 5 stars on podcasts. Make sure that you guys are interacting with us on YouTube. I love you guys. Goodbye.